Oh, wait. It's probably down here. On.
Okay.
Hello?
Oh.
That's a little too much. All right. It's 8 o'clock, everyone. We're going to get started. In an effort to lessen distraction to others and to respect our speakers, we ask that you please take a moment before we begin to silence and put away your cell phones and other electronic devices. Thank you. My name is Amanda, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help others to achieve sobriety, help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA Safety Card and Safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Cam will read the steps.
Hey everyone, Cameron Alcoholic.
Cameron.
Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to all alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Cam. Tonight is anniversary night, so be sure you sign the cards that are going around the room. And as such, we will be honoring our celebrants at the start of the meeting. Tonight, we have 2 celebrants. Would the celebrants please join me up front? Okay. We have matching celebrants. Love the color palette. Okay. We take this time each month to recognize group members as they mark milestones in their sobriety. It is our belief that pausing in gratitude for these milestones provides hope and inspiration and also fosters love and support for one another. We do ask everyone to keep in mind the number of celebrants and the end time of the meeting. It is the group's conscience that celebrants try to limit their shares to a minute or so. And now please join me in singing, Happy Anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear celebrants. Happy anniversary. anniversary to you. Okay, our first celebrant is Samantha with 2 years.
Hi everybody, I'm Samantha, I'm an alcoholic. Honestly, I can't even believe that I was able to make it this far. Sobriety has honestly given me a second chance at truly living my life. You know, it took getting involved, being in the middle of AA, giving it an honest shot, having a sponsor, working the steps, and keeping it in the day. So grateful to be sober. Thanks.
And next, we have Katie, also with 2 years.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic. Oh my God, 2 years. I used to look at people up here that had 2 years and I was like, they have no problems in their life. Like, can you imagine what it would be like to have 2 years sober? Oh my God, I still have problems. But they're different and I'm able to deal with them and I have the tools to live a beautiful life. And you know, I'm someone that, as most of you know, it took me like 5-6 years to get a year, and then I relapsed for a day, and then I came back, and then now I have 2 years. So it's not linear. For me, it's not linear. And I the obsession to drink was so strong. It was so strong, and I never thought it would go away. I do not think about drinking today. I don't think about not thinking about not drinking today. It is a beautiful life. You still have sober problems. I do, but I have such a good community, and I just made eye contact with Chris, so I better wrap this up. But I have so much fun here. If you cannot tell, every time I get up to this microphone, I have so much fun. I love my life. I love you guys, and that's it. Thank you.
Because of tonight's celebration, the format of tonight's meeting is only one 10-minute speaker followed by our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statements of unity and anonymity and therefore ask all our speakers to identify by first name only and refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is Diana.
Everybody, I'm Diana. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for having me tonight. Thanks to Sarah, who's not here, for asking me to speak. And congratulations to the celebrants. That's awesome. My sobriety date is December 21st, 2018, and I always start with that because it's a miracle that I have a sobriety date. I never thought that I would have a sobriety date. I am the type of alcoholic that I couldn't go, you know, more than a few hours without putting a substance in my body, you know, and I knew from very early on that I drank and used substances different from other people. I didn't realize that alcohol affected me differently until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, when I picked up my first drink, I blacked out. You know, and that set the tone for the rest of my drinking. I, you know, immediately fell into blackout drinking. Drinking didn't immediately become the most important thing in my life, but it certainly headed in that direction pretty quickly. You know, when I was 13 and picked up that drink, I was an honor roll student. I played sports. I rode horses competitively. Like, I had stuff going on in my life, and that all just went by the wayside, you know, and drinking became the only thing that was important to me, to the point that, you know, as a 13-year-old honor roll student, by the time I'm, you know, ready to graduate high school, I'm barely graduating high school, and I have no plans for college, I have no job, I have, like, no plans, period. Like, nothing lined up. My plans are to drink and get high with my friends in my hometown. That's it. That's like my whole aspiration for life. And I was fine with that, you know, so that kind of set the tone for settling for less. You know, I never thought that I would live to the age that I've reached at this point. So, you know, I continued to like not set myself up to live a long life. Like I didn't plan for retirement. I didn't take care of my health or like my teeth. And like, you know, all these things are sort of, it's a gift of sobriety that I'm able to take care of these things now. But, you know, the drinking progressed. There were other substances that brought me to my knees much quicker than alcohol alone probably would have. And I came to AA before I was ready, to be honest. I came to AA. It was recommended to me by a lot of people through my life, through employers, through friends, through my doctor recommended I go to AA. And, you know, I thought they were all like so stupid and rude for suggesting that I might have a problem. But eventually I did go to a meeting, and I thought it was so weird. And, you know, I saw the steps and I saw the word God, and I was like, this is not for me. This, like, this cannot be the answer. So I tried for a really long time to control and manage my drinking on my own. You know, and our literature talks about a lot of different ways that a lot of us have tried to do that. You know, I wouldn't drink like whiskey. I wouldn't drink, you know, during the week. I wouldn't drink in the morning. Like I would set up all these rules for myself to try and control my drinking and then like just consistently blow through them, right? And then make excuses as to why it was okay. So I eventually, you know, life started to fall apart. It wasn't a party anymore. You know, in my 20s, I had a lot of fun drinking when I was younger, but as I got older, like I burned through one set of friends after another. You know, I kept finding people, you know, would comment on my drinking, and I didn't like that, so I would cut them out of my life. I'd find another group of friends that I thought would be able to keep up with me, and then the same thing would happen over and over again. So eventually, you know, I was alone. And I think only, you know, the loneliness of an alcoholic is something that a non-alcoholic really can't understand, you know. So I got to that point where I was drinking alone all the time. My life was very, very small. I worked like a block away from where I lived. And, you know, the liquor store, there was probably three of them within a half mile radius. And that was, I was in that half mile radius. My entire life was in that half mile radius. And then I got kicked out of that apartment. I couldn't afford another apartment. I ended up having to move home with my parents. I had no other options. And then, you know, my parents really had no idea how bad things had gotten. Living with them, it was, you know, brought to the surface. There was a car accident, cops came to the house in the middle of the night, you know, this whole scene. And then the next day, when I woke up in the morning, I saw the look on my mother's face, and I realized for the first time that my drinking was affecting someone other than me. You know, it was this like waking up moment. And I don't remember thinking the words, but the words came out of my mouth, I need to do something about my drinking. And, you know, as soon as I said that, I was like, shit. But I called Central Services, I found a meeting, I went to a meeting that night, and I still thought it was really weird that everyone held hands. I still wanted nothing to do with God, but I was able to listen that night to the woman speaking and identify with what she was saying. And rather than like try to compare myself out of the meeting, I could hear where our stories were similar and where I had the same feelings and, you know, the same emotions as she did. And I thought, you know, maybe I am in the right place here. So I continued to come, and I didn't want to do the steps. I really didn't. I thought that I could sit in the back of the meeting and figure out how to be sober and, you know, get a year and then be gone. You know, I did not want to stick around AA. But to my great surprise, I was really under the impression that when I put down alcohol and drugs, my life was going to get better, you know, and it got much worse. And I was just shocked by that because I really had thought that drugs and alcohol were my problem. But, you know, by sitting down with a sponsor who understands this stuff and going through the book and coming to understand what I'm up against, this disease of alcoholism, I come to understand that the drugs and alcohol are my solution to my problem. So take them away and I don't know how to live my life. You know, I need a solution to replace drugs and alcohol if I'm going to continue to live successfully in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, despite the resistance I had, despite thinking this is not going to work for me, I'm very unique, there's just no way, I don't believe in God, I had no idea what else to do. So I decided to give it a shot, you know? And again, I still would look at the steps and think, you know, the fourth step, you know, when I get to that, I'm probably not going to do that. Like, that looks pretty bad. And when I get to, like, 9, I'm not saying sorry to anyone. And 12, I mean, I definitely, for sure, I know I didn't tell my sponsor this, but in my head, I'm like, I am never helping another alcoholic. I was like, I cannot wait to just, like, figure out how to be sober and then leave. Like, that was my whole plan. And thankfully, you know, the steps are laid out in the order they're laid out for a reason. And in going through them, again, like I said, with a sponsor that understands this stuff, I experienced a psychic change somewhere along the way, you know. And by the time I got to the places I mentioned earlier, by the time I got to the fourth step, I was ready to clear that stuff out. By the time I got to the ninth step, I wouldn't say I was like raring to go to make amends, but I was like willing, you know what I mean? And by the time I was ready to sponsor people, I mean, that is the bright spot in my life today. Like, I can't imagine life without sponsoring other women. To be able to pass on what was so freely given to me is like such a gift. So I will wrap it up with that. Thank you again for letting me speak. If anyone is struggling or needs to talk, I'll be around after the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana. We will now observe the seventh tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, GSO has withdrawn approximately $4.5 million from the reserve fund. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket. Would anyone like to help me help out with passing the basket? But you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. For those of you in person, you will see a QR code in the basket, and for those online, there is a QR code. Oh, there's no QR code on the screen, but our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $400 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. We thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, TAG has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
I am TAG, I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Number four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And lastly, number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Tag. Beacon Group is run by a steering committee, is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month at 6:30 p.m. in a hybrid format, both here at St. Paul's Church and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? And now let's welcome our main speaker, Al.
Hi, everybody. My name is Al, and I am a recovered alcoholic. I say that because I'm recovered. Like when you were saying, the problem has been I don't think about not drinking. I'm in that place of neutrality, safe and protected. And as a result of a person approaching me when I was unapproachable, listen, folks, I went to AA for 14 years before I got my one-year deal. Okay, so it's like, never had to speak because you had to have 90 days. I don't know where that came from, but it worked for me anyway. But what happened finally when I was crushed by that self-imposed crisis, I could no longer avoid. I could not evade the problem that I was in. I wanted the consequences to go away most of my life. And you know what happened? They never did. That feeling of irritable, restless, and discontent that came when I didn't have a drink or something. I did a lot of drugs too, but alcohol was my master. Without that, I was a train wreck. Everybody around me got a piece of that stuff, too. You know what's funny? After 14 years, I stopped going to AA. I was like, what a waste of time that was. You know, I could get drunk in the parking lot at the break. That's what we used to do, me and my buddy Steve Berry and Bobby, a bunch of guys. Pass a pint of grape around, and the second half of the meet was always better. Always, yeah, you laugh now, but it was like, yeah, then you can make fun of everybody. Yeah, put a bunch of quarters in. And finally, my wife had had enough of that stuff. The police had escorted me out of my home. I had 3 little daughters grabbing a hold of my legs. Please don't, Daddy, don't leave. I blamed it all on her, too. She's doing it. Your mother made this happen. My sponsor always used to say the scars are deep and the wounds are very long. And they were. How do you ever make that up to your children? I'm trying now. But, folks, I was not even allowed to watch my own children. I could not be. My wife had to go get a job because I could never make it home with any paycheck. I got paid pretty good. But, man, Friday night, Saturday night, they seemed to disappear, and so did I, until all the dough was gone, and then come home with pockets inside out and, I don't know, beat up, hungover. Sometimes the cops would bring me. It really didn't matter. But finally, my wife had to go get a job because she was sick of getting the lights shut. Stuff could happen. It really did. I was like, what, are you kidding me? I'm trying so hard. I was not. My sister-in-law had to watch me watch my kids. Isn't that crazy? Huh? Well, my wife went out and earned pennies to go and try to pay some of the bills. That wasn't enough. But finally, when the cops escorted me out of my home, with my little girl hanging onto my legs, me blaming on their mother, I'm living up in the woods and in the town forest, actually, and feeling sorry for myself, doing anything I could to stem enough money to get a pint of Four Roses so I could just take the edge off. That's what I drank. My drink of choice. I drank anything, by the way. My drink of choice, if I had it, it was $1.39 for a pint. It was a lot of money then. But the reason I say this stuff, finally, when I realized I couldn't live like this anymore, I went to a church. I was not a frequent flyer there, by the way. And I asked the minister, well, God, help me. I can't live like this anymore. I'm a drunk. I can't stop. Is there something God will do? Of course. God will help everything, every problem you've got. Well, what do I have to do? Well, why don't you go to AA? I'd gone for 14 years already. AA did not work for me. I was convinced it wouldn't work. Folks, I was convinced you had to go there, claim your seat in the front, shut up, listen, and wait for the miracle. Like I told you, the second half of the meeting was always fun, waiting for the miracle then. The first part, the meetings were terrible. Now, I didn't go to any place that they had any kind of a solution. People come up here and they yacked about their problems. They told about their stories, the humorous stories, the sad stories, the tragic stories that alcohol had caused them. But they didn't talk about the solution. How did you go? Oh, yeah, you just say your prayers. God will remove it. Sit in that seat and wait for the miracle. People came in there and they said, I just came to claim my seat. Why? You laugh, but you hear stuff like that today. I just came in to claim my seat. Well, that's cool. Man. Grab a seat and screw it. Sorry. My sponsor would say stuff. Yeah, take any seat you want. Get out of here. We don't need you. You're not helping nobody. Wow. What a staggering thing. But he approached me. I did not ask him to be my sponsor. He went by this crazy thing here, basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what it says? It says, therefore, when we were approached by these, it said men in the book, but they mean people, whose problem had been solved, I had no other choice. I didn't have no game left. Pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools or die from untreated alcoholism. Wow. I didn't realize it at the time that he had a solution. But he came up to me, right in front of a whole bunch of people. He called me an a-hole in front of everybody, and he gave me the finger just like this and stabbed me with it. And he said, you're going to die, a-hole. Listen, I had words for him, by the way. I don't know if I told you. I'll tell you my story sometime. Stories don't keep us sober, by the way, folks. God kept me sober. He really did. I listened to stories for 14 years. I laughed at them. I cried with them. I made fun of them. I related to them. I identified with them. They did not solve my dilemma. So I didn't realize my power was not in a meeting. It was in the place that you can get by having somebody approach you, and that's what my sponsor did. He approached me, and I didn't like him. Like I said, I've been going for 14 years. I knew that old buzzard man carried a big book around all the time. Thank you very much. I'm all set with that one. I don't need this stuff. This God business is not working for me. If you'd seen half the stuff I saw in my life, you wouldn't think there could possibly be a God. Anyway, when he approached me, I was beat. I was beat into a state of reasonableness. That's what it says in here. When alcohol beat me into a state of reasonableness, I was willing to listen. So the smart answers I had when he said I'm going to die and he called me them names didn't come out of here. I didn't have anything to say to him. And he said, what are you willing to do to be done forever? I never heard that one before. Forever? Done forever? Who wants to be done? I wanted to be done forever. Well, actually, I wanted the consequences to be done forever. I wanted to still be able to enjoy and control my drinking. That's the great obsession for every abnormal drinker. I didn't know that. He said, forever. We're going to work it a day at a time, sometimes a minute at a time. We're going to work it all the time. You got to make the decision. You got to want this more than everybody in this room wants it. I can't want it for you. That's what he told me. What are you willing to do to be done forever? Big lie come right out of anything. Yeah, I'll do anything. You're not, but I bet you've all said that. What are you willing to do? Oh, anything. Well, that, gee, read the doctor's opinion. Gee, that's a big opinion. I don't want to be reading all that stuff. The minute I lied to my sponsor and told him I'm willing to do anything to be done forever. I was hoping he'd just get out of my face, because that's what I really was willing to do. Get out of here, man. I got a stomach enough dough to get a half pint or something to take the edge off. I don't feel too good right now. I ain't had a drink yet that day. I went to church instead of going to the package store and hitting up some friend, seeing if I had any credit anywhere. I was shaking. I thought it was a hangover, and it was. It was withdrawal. I didn't understand that. But when he approached me and said that stuff, I finally realized this guy knows what he's talking about. You know what he told me? He said, come to my house tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow. Now listen, I'm at the morning meeting. It starts at 7:30, gets over at 8:30. People hang around and blah, blah for about a half hour or so. And he stays there forever, it seemed like. And I was ready to get out of there. And he's supposed to take care of me right there because I had heard I was the most important person in the room. I got one of them 24-hour doodads, by the way. I had a bag of them. I had a whole bunch of them, a collection. And he wasn't willing to let me slide without one. He told me, you'll be at my house tomorrow at 7. And you know what he told me? He said, be reasonably coherent. Can you imagine telling a drunk that? Be coherent, you old... Like I said, I thought a lot of stuff at that guy. I didn't say nothing to him. I said, yeah, give me his business card. I threw it on the floor. I said, nah, nobody tells me what to do. And you know, he said, I'm not going to say it the way he said it. He said, I knew you didn't have the guts to come to my house. Oh, ho, ho. I'm a tough guy. I fancied myself a tough guy. And some of the things I did, I would try to convince you I was a tough guy. But I wasn't. I was afraid of everything. I grabbed this card off the floor and I said, I'll be there. Yeah. So guess what? I'm there 10 minutes early. I'm across the street, hiding behind a big white pine tree with Steve Berry's watch, my drinking buddy, out in the parking lot, waiting for it to be 5 minutes past 7. Because I ain't going to be told what to do by nobody. I was late. Then I walked across the street and banged on his door. He took his sweet time coming to the door, too, by the way. Oh, want some coffee? He wasn't mad. He wasn't nothing. Folks, the last thing I wanted was coffee. Because, like, he asked me to be reasonably coherent, and I was what I thought was sober. A lot of people have been what they think is sober, and what they've been is undrunk. That's a fact, I'm telling you. Sobriety, you nailed it when you said it. One of the symptoms is quitting drinking. My life was a train wreck without a drink, without a substitute. What he offered me was a flimsy reed of hope. It turned out to be the all-powerful loving hand of God. And he invited me to his home. And when I showed up at his home, reasonably late, and offered a cup of coffee, and he gave me half a cup of coffee, and we sat at his kitchen table, and he opened this book up, and he started telling me about himself, how this thing related to him. He didn't tell me about me. He didn't care about me. That's what I thought. I got to listen to this guy blab all the time about him. It's about me, ain't it? No, I'm not the most important person in the room. I heard that at AA. The newcomer, most important person in the room. I don't know about that either. I thought I was. When he approached me and challenged me, I made a decision to show up. And reasonably coherent, I showed up at his house sober. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Sober. I was sick. I was doubling over. I was cramping. I was sweating. I thought I had a hangover. I was dying for a drink. Just a little one. When I told him that, I said, man, I'm coherent. I said, man, you need a drink. Whoa, I like this guy. All of a sudden, I started liking him. He didn't give me one, but he said he would. He really did. He told me. He said, two guys came to his house and put a quarter to old Mr. Boston on his kitchen table. Said, Bob, listen, bud, we ain't here to watch you die from withdrawing from this stuff. We're here to show you how to live without it. That's what he offered me, that flimsy reed of hope. I said, wow. And he told me about himself. I told you that. Man, that guy, who's a scary dude? He wasn't just some old guy. Man, that stuff, yikes. If half the stuff he told me was true, man, I should have come here with friends. You know, he asked me if I had enough. He asked me, if alcohol was my master. He asked me if I could live without her, if I could stop on my own, God bless you. And I told him the truth for a change. I said, I've been trying. I've tried to stop. I could pull it off for a little while, a couple of days. I had a year and 4 days sobriety one time. Once. Right? Now, guess what? You ever read Bill's story in this book where it says fear sobered him for a while? Huh? Fear will sober us all for a while. I was going to go to Rahway State Penitentiary for 5 to 10 years. And I was on probation. And, buddy, I knew if I drank, I would violate that for sure. So for 1 year and 4 days, until the magistrate signed those papers, fear sobered me. You know what my wife told me? Just before probation was getting over with, we had a couple weeks to go. I liked you better when you were drunk. Ho-ho! You wait. You wait till they sign this off. You'll see how much you like me then. Because it's all I could think about when I could drink again in safety. In safety. I never could, but I thought I could. You know what happened? The magistrate signed that paper. On the way home from court, I smashed my pickup truck into a tree, drunk as a skunk. I don't know how they never caught me, right? And I was back again. So fear sobered us for a while. Consequences sobered us for a while. The love of a person sobered us for a while. Something became operative in my life a few times in my life, and I stopped drinking for a little bit. That's what it says right in here. When something becomes operative, that means life demanding, life changing, we can stay sober. The warning of a doctor, it says. And my doctor told me, hey, man, your liver's going to fall right out if you keep this up. That's all in his liver, they can't do it. No, it's not. It's alcoholism, mister. Guess what? He ain't my doctor no more. I'm with this guy. I don't need that stuff. But when I was at my sponsor's house that night, and he told me he thought I needed a drink, I agreed with him. I said, this guy's got a little something more going than I've heard at AA meetings for 14 years. Now, mind you, I never went to any place where they prayed or anything like that. I went to get my meeting for the day in, because I heard if you make 90 meetings in 90 days, you can't have a problem, or it'll go away, or whatever. I don't know what I heard, tell you the real truth. Seems like that's what I heard. And I could never pull that one off either, by the way. 90 meetings in 90 days. Okay. Listen to what I did. 90 meetings in 90 days, cool. And they started adding a consecutive one after a while. But when they first started saying 90 meetings in 90 days, oh, sure. I'll skip the first 2 months and I'll go to 3 a day for a month and I'll have them. That's how we think. Tell me. That's how us alcoholics think. Right around the box. Here we go. There's a way out of this one right there. When he asked me if I was powerless, if I had enough, if my life was manageable, folks, I was out of game. I had nothing going. I had nothing going. I call myself a woodsman because I was living up in the town forest, right? Woodsman, right? Yeah, sounded better than bum, because that's what I really was. I'm a woodsman. Okay, Woodsy, I get it. Yeah, but listen, folks. See, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. I insist on it. If life was nothing but a glum lot, who would care to live it? So we enjoy some of these stories that we had out of their past. Some of our tales of woe and misery and sometimes craziness, right? But what happens is, when I'm at his kitchen table, he convinced me. He said, you did step one out there, buddy. Don't you get it? Your life is a train wreck. You can't stop. You just told me that. You're an alcoholic, buddy. Yeah, I guess you're right. Congratulations, you got step one, figure it out. Then he asked me, do you believe in God? Now, is that a yes or no question? Huh? Do you believe in God? Well, it depends. That's how we answer questions. The alcoholics don't answer questions, yes or no. They don't. Talk to somebody, you'll find out. Okay? Talk to me, you find out from me, that's for sure, right? The thing is, I give him this big description. Oh, yeah, he's an old guy. He's flying around up in a cloud. He's watching everybody. He's got a club in one hand, lightning in the other hand. And, man, he rules the world. He's got it. I'll take that as a yes. Okay. Do you believe that fellow that you said is flying around, got all this, and runs the whole world, can restore you to sanity. He said, Al, you are strangely insane. You know, insanity is beyond you, buddy. You are strangely insane when it comes to drinking. I've listened to you blab in these meetings over the years. I've sat there and listened to you cry and moan and blame it on everybody but the guy in the glass. Do you believe that God can restore you to sanity? Oh, I kind of always believed in God. I really have. And I believe he could do anything. Yeah. God can do anything. Cool. You got step two figured out here. We're going to go in a little deeper detail with it. How about are you willing to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him? How about that one? I didn't understand God at all. Sure, why not? No, I didn't say, I didn't even say that. In my life, I believe God already has my life. But my will, it's the only thing God gave me that he didn't give my dog. He gave me free will. I don't know if I'm willing to give that up. He said, Al, if you're not willing to give that up, bud, we don't have much that's going to help you in here. The only thing that's ever worked for me, a bum like me, is me becoming willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And my understanding has grown and grown and grown. He said, if you're willing to do that, we can go from there. I said, geez, I don't know. I don't know if I really want to do that. That God business kind of scares me. You see, living in the town forest don't scare you? Boy, oh boy, what a wise guy. Yeah. He had answers for everything, but he had truthful answers to everything. That flimsy little hope he gave me started, I said, and it worked for you. He said, I was just willing, Al, just willing. I still have to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. How do you pray, by the way, Al? Yikes. Well, you know, like pretty much like everybody. Instead of saying I don't, that's what I said. Well, and then I said to him, well, how do you pray? He goes, chair goes away from the table. Boom, he's on his knees on the floor at his kitchen table. Hey, join me, I'll show you here. Yikes. Listen, okay. I was so afraid that his wife would come through the kitchen door and catch me on my knees on the kitchen floor praying. I'm looking like this. She gotta be kidding me. I don't want to. What if she catches me? I wouldn't have cared if she caught me coming across the road and tripped on her lawn, fell down and puked on myself with my own juices and laid there half in the bag. I wouldn't have cared about that one. But I'm telling you, this is what? Yeah. So I joined him. And he said, repeat after me if you want to. So he said the third step prayer. And I didn't know the third step prayer. It was a bunch of words as far as I knew just then. I said the same thing. And he said, now we're gonna pull this apart in depth, mister. But you made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. As you understand me, if you don't understand him, what I want you to do is improve your conscious contact with God. Right now. We're going to ask God to help you. We're going to ask God to help all the people around me. I'm going to ask God to help me. That's what he said. I said, gee, okay. He convinced me that God could and would if I sought him. That night, I was 7:05 when I showed up at his house. At 2:15 the next morning, I went across the street, got on my bicycle, and rode back to my little camp out in the town forest. And you know what I had in my possession? This thing. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had an assignment to look through that and read it. And I had 2 dimes that he gave me. And he said, Al, this is not a dime down payment on a pint of whiskey. This is for the payphone that's right up the end of that trail that comes out of the town forest for you to call me. Promise me, if you get drunk, you won't use those 2 dimes for any other thing. Sure. I didn't spend them for any other thing. And you know something, folks? I never had another drink. I never had another drink. I wanted one. I wanted to drink profusely. But I used him 2 times, and I called him. You know something? I called him one time at 2:30 in the morning, and he answered the phone. I was so mad. Yeah, he went. I was all set. I'm done for this. And he answered the phone. He said, "Give me 15 minutes. I'll be up." I said, you don't have to come and get me. You don't have to come and get me. I will come and get you right now. I will do anything to help you not drink tonight." I said, "You know what, brother? I got this." I didn't call him brother either. "Bob, I got this. Thank you, man." He said, "Look, I want you to go to page 86, take the little flashlight that I gave you, and you look at it and see what it says about your constructive review of the day. See that first prayer in step 11? That's right there. You know where it is. Repeat that a couple times and really mean it. Constructively review my day. Not tear myself a new fanny." And I did that. You know something? I got relief. And the next morning, I met him. And we talked about it. We talked about that obsession, that lurking notion. Folks, you think you're all set. It's still there. Be careful. Untreated alcoholism can come to people. I've seen people with 18 years, with 34 years, go out. Something happens catastrophic in their life. That all they relied on was meetings to make it. And the next thing you know, they're out there drunk again. I know a guy had a colostomy bag. He used to pour a fireball in there. It's like, are you kidding me? 34 years of being undrunk and going to meetings and half meetings and getting his meeting in for the day. And when his wife died, he couldn't face life anymore. Imagine that. It's called untreated alcoholism, folks. Untreated. And there's only 2 things that treat alcoholism that I've ever found that worked. Alcohol treats it. The results ain't too good. But it's short term, and the results are terrible and horrific. And you know what else? God treats it. Mm-hmm. And God is permanent and forever, and he's always there. Mm-hmm. I hear people say, this God business, it's the only business that I got going. The only thing that I have found that ever worked for me, when you said it, nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking for me than intensive work with another alcoholic. It works when all other activities fail. So if you folks go to a meeting and you see somebody mosey on up there and get one of them doodads, them 24, no shame deals, right? People say, "No shame." Somebody will say that, I'll tell you right now. Man, you know what I always tell them? You don't have any shame. We ain't got what we're going to have to face when we come to this place. That's the one thing my sponsor told me he saw in me for the first time in 14 years. Guilt, shame, and remorse. So, when you get one of those meetings that I happen to be at, and you get one of them 24-hour doodads, I will approach you, just like he did to me. I will come up and ask you what you're willing to do. If you think, and you know what the answer is, I swear, most of it, I'm all set. And what comes right after that? This time. I know what I gotta do this time. Well, what are you doing here now? What did you come back and get that 24-hour chip for? Folks, the answer is, I stopped going to meetings. I swear, if you've approached people with a solution to alcoholism and you ask them why they went out, they'll tell you 90% of the time they stopped going to meetings because they're told meeting makers make it. Folks, they make lots of meetings. That's about all. I made lots of meetings for 14 years. No solution was presented to me, other than claim a seat, just keep coming. I don't know if you're gonna give chips all the time. Well, you probably are. You know what? I'm not gonna say nothing about that. I don't want you throwing nothing at me, right? So, anyway, nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking an intensive work with another alcoholic that works when all other activities fail, and that's why I approach all kinds of people. I go to the jails, I go to institutions, I go to people's houses. I go anywhere that somebody's suffering, right? And, you know, every once in a while, there's a heartening success story. Every once in a while, somebody will say, yeah, and they'll trudge the road to happy destiny with me. And what it says in my basic text? It says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Imagine that. Doesn't say, oh yeah, well, I read this, I told him to go home and do some writing and do a whole bunch of stuff, and when he got all this writing all done, come back and see me and he can read it to me. Doesn't say that in here. Doesn't say it in here. If you've read Bill's story and you read it a little closely, you will see that his schoolmate visited him, and we made a list. Bill's in the nut house for the fifth time. This isn't a book, the third time. Fifth time, he tried to have a spin dry going on. Abby Thatcher approaches him, and we made a list. Bill suffered from delirium tremens, it says right in his story. He suffered from DTs. Abby wrote Bill 4-step for him, right there in the hospital, on day number 6. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Abby Thatcher wrote Bill's story. Bill did not have to read it to him. Bill had already told him his whole life story. That's what it says in the basic text. It says, until we told someone our whole life story. Doesn't say I read on my 4-step inventory. I guess you can, it doesn't hurt. We want to tell somebody our whole life story, looking at every twist of character and every dark cranny of the past. Every one of them. That 4-step inventory is supposed to get a gross of handicaps. I've heard people say, oh, my sponsor wants me to have at least 180 names on it. Mm-hmm. What? Oh, my God. I'd have to go in the phone book to find them people. I got a good memory. It's just short. 180 names. Okay, here we go. Anyway, folks, I'm not allowed to tell you my last name. After this meeting, if anybody wants a spiritual solution or just somebody to talk to, I will give you my phone number. I will tell you my name. And you know something else I'll tell you? I'll answer my phone. I'll answer my phone. How many of you got... don't text me. Don't text. Hi, Al. How's it going? No. Recovery begins somewhere, someday, when one alcoholic talks to another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Isn't that cool stuff? How do you go along with that? And you know what it does? It works for me. When Bill's in the nut house, he suddenly realized, in order to save himself, he had to carry this message to somebody else. Thanks a lot. God bless you.
Thank you, Al. We encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro, after the meeting. Getting a job at the group entails being responsible for an aspect of helping the meeting run smoothly and helps you maintain sobriety, fellowship, and get yourself in the middle of AA. We encourage all to get involved. Examples of jobs include helping put out chairs and put them away, setting up, coffee, cleaning up, and greeting. Again, see Ramiro if you're interested. And I did just want to inform the group that a former group member, Bill Kay, passed away this month due to cancer that he's been fighting since 2018. So I did just want to inform the group of his passing. And now let's welcome Julia and Chris for festivities.
Hi, everyone. My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Chris. Chris.
Julia, alcoholic.
So here at Beacon, we do festivities. So just a real quick announcement about the business meeting. So for the next 2 months, we're going to be doing the business meeting at the end of the meeting. So it's the third Wednesday of the month. So we just had ours last week. So we'll be having it, obviously, the third Thursday of July as well. And it's a great way to get involved. There's a pretty big turnout. So... also, we do fellowship after the meeting, so we're going to go down to the strip where, like, JP Licks is over here, and there's also food, real food, too, if you want to grab it. And then the 15th of July, we're going to be doing a beach day, so we rented out a pavilion. I feel like I'm this so tall.
Well, short, so
yeah, sorry. So, yeah, we're going to do a beach day. The 15th of July, we rented a pavilion. I'm not exactly sure what time it's going to start, but they've got, I think, grills or no? Do they have grills? I don't know. I'm going to do a little bit of reconnaissance, but it'll be like a picnic. We'll have some games. It'll be a good time. And then, Julia, take it away.
All right. So, save the date, guys. The Freedom Trail Conference. Thank you. is coming up in the fall, October 27th to the 29th at the Wilson's House. We only have a certain amount of spots. The last I have is 35. How many, Katie, do we have now?
22.
So hurry up. You don't want to miss out on that. Just see one of us up at the front at the end of the meeting. We have a QR code. Are you getting my
turn? No, I'm just saying I have a QR code.
And I have it too.
We'll perfect.
Yes. Yeah. Katie and Kelsey, see them after the meeting. Also, we have a once a month commitment to the Shiloh House every second Tuesday of the month in person from 7 to 8. The next one says June 20th.
But that's not right.
That's
all right. What is it? What was it? The second Tuesday?
Yes.
July 11th.
July 11th. Please see Mickey for more information if you are interested. That's it.
Perfect.
Thank you, Julia and Chris. And now we have Lane and Socrates, Lisa and Socrates for chips.
Hi, I'm Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lisa.
This is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the basic text of AA. If you do not own a copy, please do not leave home. Live here without one. It sells for $9.50. Meeting lists are also free. Other AA literature is available at cost on this beautiful table right here. Please visit our, the Beacon Group marks milestones in recovery with chips. When you hear your time, please come up and get your chip. 18 months. 11 months. 10 months. 9 months. 8 months. 7 months. A half a year, 6 months. 5 months. 4 months. 3 months, otherwise known as 90 days. 2 months. Awesome. 1 month, and some say the most important chip. Would anyone like to take a desire chip tonight? Still be drinking and just have a desire. Okay. All right. Okay.
Hey, my name's Socrates. I'm an alcoholic. Sponsorship is the cornerstone of AA's 12-step recovery program. If you're new to AA or our group and you do not have a sponsor, we strongly suggest that you get one. Anyone who's willing to speak to people about AA or sponsorship, please raise your hands. It's almost the whole room. Thank you all so much. AA anniversaries are celebrated on the last Wednesday of every month. This is an opportunity for members to come and express their gratitude for a minute or so. We suggest all celebrants make a donation of $1 per year of sobriety to be sent to GSO. Excellent cake has already been served. In an effort to promote unity and enhance sobriety, Beacon Group sponsors anniversary watches. This is an opportunity for Beacon Group members on their 364th day of sobriety to sit with their sponsor and friends, beginning at 9:30 p.m., and watch their first year of sobriety be ushered in. Anniversary watches take place at the Brighton IHOP at 1850 Soldiers Field Road. If you're about to celebrate an anniversary, please see our anniversary chair, Sarah. Yay. After the meeting, or email bganniversaries@gmail.com.
Thank you, Lisa and Socrates. This has been a regular meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You are cordially invited to meet with us again and to become a regular member of our group. To be on our email list, please sign up with your name, phone number, and sober date at beacongroupaa.com. As you leave tonight, please remain on this side of the street to chat and use the cigarette receptacles provided to respect those who live in the area. Please remember our custom of thanking the speakers. We will form a line just out the door in that little hall where the coffee is. And now for all who care to join the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Is Zoom recording?
Yeah.